Hello and welcome to the all new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, and here for a very special edition of the podcast, we are joined by legendary bass player Juan Alderet.
Yes, thank you.
With me also today, I've got Jay Cross.
Where's my intro?
With me today, I've got a legendary guitar shop manager and hero, Jay Cross.
Hi, Joe.
And also with me, I've got video expert and superhuman in more ways than I can possibly explain over a podcast, Joss Allen.
Yo.
Brilliant stuff. Well,
That was exhausting, wasn't it?
I tell you what, I'm completely knackered now. We are a minute into the podcast, and I'm completely out of energy.
And out of questions. Hey, thank you guys. I'll see you guys tonight.
we've been running around all day sorting out. We've got a brilliant. I mean, when you're listening to this, the clinic will have already happened. So unless you were at it, well, gutted.
Yeah, bad luck.
But yes, we're hosting tonight in the GAK store a clinic with Juan Alderet, where he's going to be talking to us about Earthquaker Devices pedals, a very boutique pedal brand who makes some of the weirdest and wackiest and most usably unusable pedals on the market. I think we've spoken about the Rainbow Machine on the podcast enough times for everyone to be aware of them. But yeah, so Juan's going to be talking to us. He's going to be doing a clinic with us tonight for the Earthquaker Devices pedals. But we thought we'd grab him and talk to him a bit on the podcast, just about pedals in general, because Juan Alderet also runs pedalsandeffects.com, which is probably the most successful pedals based website out there, and you know, just a great place for anyone to get information on different pedals and stacking effects and just how they work, more than just seeing a YouTube video where people are just using that individual effect normally in quite sort of safe confines. So yeah, it's a great website for that. So we thought we'd talk a bit about that. Of course, Juan's also been the bass player in, loads of legendary bands, everything from Racer X, the Mars Volta, and Big Sur, and a host of sort of other brilliant bands. So we thought we'd talk a bit about some of that stuff as well. But yeah, let's talk about pedals and effects, because that's something you've been doing for a few years now.
Yes.
How's that going? How did that come about?
It's been going extremely well, way beyond what I thought it would be, because I'm meeting people all over the world when I'm on tour, and they'll come up and they go, "I know you," and then I go, "Oh yeah," and then they go, "You make pedal videos, yes," and then they go, "pedalsandeffects.com," and I'm like, "Yeah," and they go, "I didn't know you were in the Mars Volta, and I just knew you from your videos, and then I read about you, and then I went, oh, you're in the Mars Volta or whatever, yeah," and so I'm meeting so many people who just know me from my website, like, especially if I'm like in music stores or something, they're like, oh hey, it's that dude who makes those videos, so yeah, it's doing really well. I was on tour and I was bored backstage. It was like the last Mars Volta tour, and so I was online. I was like, I wanted to start a website, because I was just tired of seeing like blues guys playing shitty riffs.
Yeah.
Can I cuss on this, or is that
yeah,
bad?
Yeah, yeah, that's
oh, okay,
fine.
Cool. Playing really shitty riffs and stupid blues licks, and I was like, oh, this bores the shit out of me. This has had nothing to do with the way I listen and hear music. So I go, I should start my own, because there's a million guys who play blues licks in videos checking out pedals, right? But who's doing anything weird? And I was like, I wonder if pedalsandeffects.com, that sounds catchy. And I look and I go, oh, it's available. I bought it right then and there backstage. And then I just kept I'd be backstage coming up with songs. I'd be like, oh, pedalsandeffects.com, pedalsandeffects.com. I'm like, yeah, then all the guys are just like, shut up, start your website already. So I did. I built a studio so I could film in there. I stuck my 300-400 pedals in there. And now it's like become this mecca for kids. There's kids who literally want to just like come hang out at my studio and see it. It's like a museum or something maybe to them. But I started filming it, and it's just, it really has been great. I was doing it for bass players because there wasn't any videos for bass players. And then now I'm like, well, I can't just do that. I'm going to start doing guitar players. So I've had guys like Nick Reinhardt from Terramellos, my friend Dan Elkin, who played in Broken Bells. I've had a few other guys coming in. We're going to have more synth guys coming in. Alessandro Cortini, who plays keyboards and synths for Nine Inch Nails, he's going to come in and do some.
Oh, that's cool.
So we got a lot of different things that are going to evolve. Drummers want to come in and throw snares through delays and show how they do it. So we're going to do that as well. And you know, so it just keeps growing. And yeah, I'm just, when I go to these trade shows, like NAMM shows or whatever, it's like, people come up to me like, hey, Juan, here you go. All right, go on tour. And guys will go, like, you know, I'll be walking in the audience, and some guy's like, hey, I got something for you. Break out their backpack. Here you go. It's usually a fuzz, but still, that's fine. That's why I do fuzz wars, because I get so many fuzzes. I'm like, I can't possibly do 150 fuzz pedals. So I'm like, I'll just do fuzz wars, knock four out at one time. So, and that ends up being a great idea, because kids are always like, I love fuzz wars. They just love any kind of competition. So I do reverb wars now. I do envelope filter wars. Ring modulator wars is going to come up. So, you know, they just love competition and battle. So, but yeah, it's been going really well.
Brilliant. We were before we were podcasting, I introduced one to Barefoot.
Bigfoot.
To the King Fuzz.
King Fuzz.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite fuzz.
I gotta hear it.
It's so good, dude.
I can't get it anywhere else. You know what I'm saying?
It's so good. We sold one today, actually.
Yeah, I know.
That guy bought that one.
That guy bought it. Was that the only one we had?
It might be. Oh, no.
Are you serious? That just happened?
You can just buy mine off me. I'll bring it in.
it's so good. I just love it. The amount of boost you can get out of it as well. Just not just using it as a fuzz, just the amount of boost you can get out of it. Sounds really, really...
I even said to you, I go, I want to hear this. You know, pedal.
Yeah, man.
You know, after this guy messes around with it. I mean, I just, you know, a lot of guys when they go to stores, I just check this stuff out, and they're gonna, you know, do what they do. But I
just saw him at the checkout, and he had the bot. I'm pretty sure he took it, but right. It was funny. He tried
something else out as well.
The Clovenhoof. He was checking out the Earthquaker devices. Clovenhoof.
Right. Okay. Was that the other one he was checking out? Yeah. No. He was like, yeah. I had a quick chat with him, and what he was saying was he wanted, you know, what he described, I was like, that isn't one pedal, that's like you've got to get a few pedals. And he was like, I don't think I need a few pedals. I was like, man, just sit down and then like let one of the guys have a chat with you. Right. And I think he's walked out with a few pedals. Like,
well, good for him. Yeah. And good for the builder, for sure.
Yeah.
Barefoot, right?
Bigfoot Engineering. Yeah.
Oh, because I'm thinking Barefoot because you guys are by the water. And I was like, yeah, Barefoot.
I have no idea where Bigfoot came from. I don't know where Reese thought of that name.
I don't know either. I think it just...
Bigfoot's the legend in America. So
yeah. I don't know where the name came from. I think it's just...
Well, Bigfoot, because I guess your Bigfoot stomps on it.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe he's got big feet. Yeah, I don't know. He's a tall
fella. Bruce is quite tall, isn't he? Zero to 10 on that fuzz, dude. That thing goes from like... to 100. That thing is so heavy.
Oh, I'm so bummed right now. All right, pull me out of my depression.
Well, you mentioned that you were going to get drummers in to hit snares through effects. Have you heard of, first of all, I imagine you have, or tried the Roland Space Drum?
Space Drum.
Oh man,
oh, no.
The Space Drum is like, oh. I've never tried one.
No,
I mean, we've watched videos, haven't we? But
yeah, I mean, obviously, explain the Space Drum.
The Space Drum is just it does this sound. It's a pad.
It's like a Syndrome's used to do that.
But it's kind
back
of,
in the '80s.
Yeah. It's kind of an effect pedal.
Yeah.
You'd sort of put it in a chain with a load of other things and just have that one sound.
That disco sound, like, boom!
Why not?
Like when you hear it, Ring My Bell, do you guys know that song? It's a very famous disco song out of the 70s in America, but it's like, Ring My Bell!
Oh, yeah.
And it has a boom!
Oh, there you go.
That's probably the only Roland Space Drum song about. Amazing. So, I guess as we're talking about pedals, I have got some notes here. I've got some sort of a rough outline of questions that I thought I'd ask, and then I thought I'd see where they end up going. So, I thought, right, Effect pedals. Your pedal boards are much bigger than most bass players' pedal boards. And I mean, a lot of the time when we see sort of the live stuff, especially for the Mars Volta, but I guess also for Big Sur, you're using two separate pedal boards worth of effects.
Go look at, there's when we were finishing up the Francis and Mutor going into Amputecture, and even after even the Amputecture tour, I had four-foot pedal boards.
Jesus.
So I had one facing John, the drummer, and then I had one facing the audience, I had one behind me, and then I had one on top of my two SVTs. So the ones up there were the ones I manipulate with my hands, like delays and stuff. So yeah, I had these giant pedal boards, and I don't know, I had like 50 pedals on stage.
How did you go about?
Omar had more than me though, so you know, like just so you know, like I got to throw that out there because he had like all his station, and then he had mobile ones that were off to the side. He had way more than me.
Dude, being a guitar player and looking at Omar's ring is just unreal.
Was it a competition between?
No, not at all. It's just because it was a band that just encouraged like exploration, and so they didn't even want to know. They were just like, the only one who really dreaded it was my tech, because I would go, I'd look at him and I'd see him like at soundcheck, I'd go, hey, and he would just go, what? And I'm like, put this on, you know what I mean? And he'd have to wire it in and figure it out, because I'd be in music stores all the time buying stuff. It's like that addiction. Like, I'm not the only one who had, like, Jay Maskus, he still wakes up in the morning, hits music stores and buys gear.
It's called GAS, Gear Acquisition Syndrome.
Yes.
How did you go about stacking your boards? Did you have like a board dedicated to drives, a board dedicated to octaves, then one to modulation and one to delays?
Or? God, I guess I could have done that. That makes sense. No, mine was like, you know, what do I use the most? And that's the one that faced John, because I faced John, you know, pretty much almost the entire set. Because I had to face John, but I could also see Omar give cues. So that was like my main stuff. So my meat and potatoes, so my Boss CS2 compressor, my Big Muff, my micro synthesizer, all the stuff, a Boss OC2, maybe a meat box, and then all the stuff that I always go to, and tremolo, you know, whether it was the Hummingbird in the end or in the back then I used to use the Boss PN2. But so that stuff. And then the stuff facing the audience was like my bigger pedal ones, like my ring modulators, like the Moog. I used to run two Moog ring modulators, whammy pedals. I think flangers were there. And then on the one behind me was, I think, more delay stuff, and then weirder pedals that I didn't really trigger a lot. Maybe, you know, whatever, some weird pedals. And then up on the top were any of the ones I can manipulate by my hand, like any of my other delays that were sounding cool to like flip, or like I had in my 88 flanger, because I would like to do weird stuff with that. Yeah, that's how it kind of went. And then usually at the end, it wasn't really wired that way. It was like, I think the output still came out of like the second pedal board, but it was, I don't know. Actually, Jerry Riccardi, who was my tech, he's still like, if I email him, I'm sure he starts sweating when I email him, even though he hasn't worked for me in years. But
so yeah. were you less concerned with like signal chain and more concerned with just like having the ability to get to the effects?
Right. I mean, you know, like, I guess if I was in John Mayer's band, I'd give a shit about signal shit like that. But I'm not. I was in the Mars Volta, so it's like my sound's already fucked up.
So
you know, and so I'm like, I'm EQing it at the rig, and you know, I might have, I one time I had like an EQ, I think Boss, it was a Boss EQ, and I would just bump the low end up a little.
Yeah,
you know, it sounded good enough. I'm always gonna have a little bit of distortion in my sound in that band, so it's like, yeah, you're already throwing so much gain. Like, I never hit like this ultimate creamy clean tone that was in a band. If it was, I would just take it. I would have a separate channel just going straight bass into the rig if I did that. But I was almost always affected in one way or another. Cool. So
were you not worried about, like, was it not so much as having duplicates on the pedal boards? It was more like, I want something different on every single pedal board.
No, you're actually right. You know, that's a good point. I mean, I had two ring modulators. I didn't use them at the same time. I used it because I didn't want to bend over, and because there's, you know, there was drastically different settings. So it was like, you know, that ring modulator has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 knobs. So you don't, you know, like, have to move five knobs during a set. Fuck that. So I just had, you know, one for one setting, which there's a song we did where the ring modulator rotates in a circle. And then the other one was just for when I hit harmonics, it would tweak it out really weird. So those were my two settings. Mm. Same with the whammy pedal. I had two different whammy pedals. I didn't want to, you know, so I had two whammy pedals on. Yeah, exactly. So some were doubles, but...
Yeah.
So, and some of them were splitters, you know, like, because I would like a lot of times I would take something out of the, I mean, take it out of the chain, and like those Boss ones have the volume knob, so I'd crank it so it would really ram, like maybe the fuzz, or it would ram the micro synth or something and make it even crazier sounding. Yeah. And you can really do that when you really throw hard input into certain pedals, it'll blow them up to something else.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was doing a lot of that. So you'd see a lot of like line selectors on my stuff. So it wasn't like 50 independent, totally different pedals. It wasn't that. It's probably 30 usable pedals, and the other 20 were line selectors or something buff, you know, whatever. Yeah.
30 usable pedals is still, you know, is still three times more pedals than most most extravagant bass players would have on their board. But from kind of massive pedal boards, I guess you kind of cut down a lot when we came to the Nocturnica tour.
Right.
You were just on a single board then for a bit. And I guess with that in mind, would you be able to pick your top five pedals that you would use if you have to have a mini board? Because you've spoken a lot about like things like the Boss CS2. I think you've been talking about since like Racer X days as being like the compressor that had to be on your on your pedal board.
Right, right.
But then I guess you've also spoken about even things like that Behringer vibrato being the only alternative to. Was it the Boss vibrato?
The Boss VB2.
Yeah, that they don't make anymore. And I guess also, I guess things like the OC2 has also been something. But but what would be the five if you had to have five? Well,
yeah, now, because like, the thing, you know, you're always evolving. I mean, I really love that Boss VB2. And I would definitely have to say the Boss CS2. But I probably maybe not the OC2 anymore. I used it for years, but I mean, maybe a Meatbox. It depends on the band, you know.
Like, of course, the Meatbox.
Yeah, I mean, if like you know, like I just did 2.5 years of touring with Deltron 3030. That's a hip hop group. That's like the guys from the first Gorillaz record, is that band, but without Damon Albarn.
Oh,
and so then, and so anyway, when I toured with that, that's a hip hop group. So I had a Meatbox. I had a Godlike. The Godlike Great Divide, which is like their version of a micro synthesizer, but it's way, it's awesome. And I use this DOD, kind of like a preamp thing. I forget the number. I think it's FX10 maybe or something, but it's just a acoustic EQ, but it sounds awesome on bass. Jonathan Hischke, one of my best friends and co-bass player, he's on my side a lot. He's the one who came up with it. He goes, check this out. And I play with it, I'm like, fuck, it's insane how it articulates your fingers. So I would put that on there, and then I would probably put that's a tough one. So I definitely would have to have the Hummingbird, the Earthquaker Devices Hummingbird.
Really? You had one of the really early Earthquaker Devices Delay on your board.
Yeah, it was the one that when I first met Jamie in 2010, I think it was, he sent me that. Because I was telling him what I was looking for, maybe I saw that it was somebody had it, or it was online or something. Anyway, I was like, "Oh, awesome! It's a really great delay and a reverb as well, and I could knock out two pedals and you know whatever." And I checked it out, and it was awesome. So that was the first thing that was on a Premier Guitar Rig Rundown, and then that's where I first met him. It was just him building pedals. Back then.
That's what we liked about that video, wasn't it? Because we're looking at all of these Earthquaker Devices pedals and going, "Oh, this one's cool. This one's cool." Looking at the catalog and seeing how many they do. And then we watched that video, and it was just you explaining how, yeah, it's just this dude that's building these pedals called, I think he wants to call them Earthquaker. We're like, oh shit, that's so weird.
Right at the beginning,
you know?
And now there's like almost 100 employees. Yeah. There's a big giant building. They're the biggest boutique pedal builder in the United States. They flew by everybody. They're a husband and wife team. Julie is a business genius. Jamie's one of the most creative people I've been around. He's such a genius, and their attention to detail is insane. and it's like easy to stand back and back it, you know? Mm. Like, I feel like I'm in their band. Like, it's like, we all look at it as like we're all in a band. It's that same camaraderie as when you're in a band. So when we go to NAMM show, it's like, here we are repping Earthquaker, and it's like, this is our band. Like, if you're on a Warped Tour, or you're on like a Lollapalooza, or you're on, you know, Glastonbury or whatever, you roll in and you're just like, this is what we are about. Yeah. And so that's, you know, Earthquaker definitely represents a lot of our own perspective. Very and cool. he was in a really great band called Party of Helicopters. And
I would think
that you would know them. So that was his band. And
I didn't know that.
Well, the guy, you know, you ever heard of the band Torch?
Yeah.
So they went through, and I'm good friends with Jonathan, the bass player, and he goes, when we hung out with them and we finally met them, we were like, we're a huge Party of Helicopter fans. And Jamie's a huge fan of their band before Torch, which was Floor.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, so see what I mean? Like, but yeah, Jamie and Julie used to have a record label. They used to put indie records out in the Midwest at the same time Touch and Go was.
What label did they run?
I forget what their labeled name was. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, a lot of, like, the way Jonathan Hischke, my friend, knows Jamie and Julie, I told him about him, and he goes, man, that name sounds familiar. And then he started thinking about it, and he goes, wait a sec, Akron? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, I've slept on their floor. Because he was in Flying Luttenbachers.
Okay.
And so he was like, yeah. And so when they met each other, they were like, yeah. And then they were like, connection, because that's how punk rock they are. Like, man. And then, you know, he was tour managing for the Black Keys. Those guys were tourists, you know, like go out and buy a billion used vintage pedals and amps that would break and blow up, and he had to fix them. And then he started learning about gear, and then he said, hey, I can build pedals, and then boom, took off.
Amazing. Awesome.
Yeah, and he has just good taste, really great taste.
You know? That's cool.
Yeah.
You kind of pioneered the Rainbow Machine, I guess, quite a lot from the Earthquaker selection.
You know, man, I got beat to the punch with that one. He sent me it, and I called him up, and I go, this is the best pedal you've ever made. He goes, yeah, I think so, too. You know, we've had that conversation, I don't know, like 5 or 6 times since then. But, and I go, I can't wait to throw this on the Mars Volta record. It's just like, it's gonna just change things. And Omar had one, too, I think. We got Omar one. And then all of a sudden, you start hearing it on other people's records, and they're like, shit, it beat us to the punch. Because everybody wants to do that magic sound, you know, the trails, like the acid trails. And then it's like, well, I can't do that now. So I don't even use it for that, like, really? Myself. I use it for, like, the weird, the other way, like, going down kind of weird modulation stuff where it goes, like, I like to do notes where I'll be playing a bass, I'm like, you know, it just sounds kind of glitchy and bizarre.
Amazing. Did it make it onto a Mars Volta record then?
Maybe Omar put it on one, but I doubt it. I don't think it did.
No.
We were already like, got beat to the punch. Yeah. I don't think it was like that.
I was going to say, was it like, I'm not using this. Bummer.
Yeah. Oh, it was for me, but him, he probably was, you know, he was already thinking on something else.
But that's quite like, it's quite funny to think about how that has like, would we be having this conversation 15 years ago? You know, this new pedal's come out and already you're involved in the company. Right. And, like, you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to use this. This is going to be great. And even before you get a chance to do it, like, it's out there and it's got a reputation for what it is.
Right.
You know, is this a conversation we could have been having 15 years ago about guitar pedals? You know?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I think, like, you know, like Van Halen was doing so much stuff.
Yeah, I suppose.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and it just kind of goes like, I mean, come on, Fugazi, like we were just listening to earlier. Yeah. I mean, that microphonic feedback, I mean, they were not pioneers, but like they just did it in probably the most musical way.
Yeah.
And so then every band started doing it, like Drive Like Jehu starts doing it, mm-hmm. and, you know, everybody's bad. So it's still, I'd say that everybody wants to innovate, because who doesn't get more excited when you put on something and you listen to it and you go, I've never heard these sounds. I mean, I love great pop songs or whatever, and that's always cool, but there's something about a sound, like an aesthetic or whatever, and you hear it for the first time, you're like, I've never heard bass sound like David Sins or the Jesus Lizard. Oh my God, this is the greatest bass sound, and you just get excited, and it takes you over. You're like, I don't know, like, I'm still that dude, I'm looking for it. I hope I put it out, but I'm stoked if I hear somebody do something, I go, how did you do that sound? What is that? Like, fucking crazy. Like, I'm like, hair is standing up on your arms and you're just like lit up, and that's what drives this shit, you know. Yeah. Definitely drives it. Everybody's looking for inspiration, you know.
So have you got a favorite Earthquaker pedal at the moment then?
Of course.
Is it the Rainbow Machine?
No, it's the Afterneath.
the afternoon.
He sent me that, I called him up and I said, hey man, this is the best pedal you've ever made. And he goes, yeah, I think so too.
I'm so glad we got some in today.
Yeah. They've been so popular. We just can't keep them in stock.
I mean,
we had four show up today.
I know I've contributed to the success of that just because the kids send me videos when they get them, and they'll send me photos with them, and they go, I got this because of you. You know, a lot of times, like in my clinic, I think the high point is when I'm playing my fretless bass into that pedal. It's just they were married together, kind of like the Boss VB2 vibrato in my fretless or whatever. But it's just like I heard it and I was like, I could do unbelievable things with this. Like I have so much inspiration and connection to it. So yeah, I mean, I can't wait for the next pedal he makes that I'm gonna call him up and go, yo, this is the best pedal. That's a tough one to beat, but we'll see.
That's the thing with reverbs though, isn't it? If you play a reverb and it's all right, you're like, yeah, this is all right. But when it's a really, really good reverb, you're like,
well, it's getting the reverb thing has taken off a little bit recently. Of course, we've had Strymon have such a massive impact, certainly over here. And I guess
Red Panda makes this thing called the Context, another unbelievable reverb, really, really, really great.
I don't know if I don't think we do that.
I'm not seeing Red Panda stuff.
Man, if you see my site, like I picked the Particle as like one of my favorites of 2014, I think. But that's an insane pedal. The Red Panda Particle is awesome. They make this new delay called the Raster, which kind of sounds a lot like a lot of what Jamie's doing with his delays and all the different reverb pedals or whatever, but it does its own thing as well. It's just, yeah, you're right. It's like mixing delay and reverb together and doing some musical stuff. So people don't, I don't know anybody wants to go into a fucking pedal and sit there and program it. And,
yeah, you just want
to turn. I takes away from playing. It's like when I was going to Musicians Institute studying bass. It's like I was, you know, I had to keep up with Paul Gilbert and play fast, but I also had to go study Musicians Institute stuff. So I'm sitting there sight reading. I'm like, I'm so shitty at this. Fuck this. I'm not doing it anymore. And then I would just get my bass and I would just rip, you know, shred. And I'm like, there I go. And now I feel like a complete musician. I was like, I don't want to sit there and program gear. I want somebody to make the gear sound musical for me, and then I can just apply it. That's what I wanted. I just want to cut the chase and start applying it. And that's what they do, where you could get, like, what is it, the Eventide Space?
Yeah.
That's an awesome pedal.
Sounds great, yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm not going in there and programming that, man. No way. And I'm not getting no Kempers to program that. I'm not that dude. If somebody wants to hand me, like, you know, a program, pre-programmed Kemper that by David Sims and the Jesus Lizard, I'll do it. But other than that, I have no interest, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Joss, you play program stuff, don't you?
Which one do you play? Do you play the Kemper or do you play the Fractal?
I've had them all. I've had the XFX and I didn't like it.
You've got the DV Mark at
the moment.
I've
got the DV Mark multi-amp.
I've never even heard of it.
I've got the Kemper.
It's Mark Bass.
Mark Bass, yeah.
Mark Bass, okay. Yeah.
They do, like, their guitar side is DV Mark.
Oh, okay.
They've done some cool... They did a small 30 watt.
The little jazz box.
Yeah, well, before that, they did a small 30 watt head called the Galileo.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That was cool. Yeah. That was cool. Just
single channel, wasn't it? Crazy.
Single channel, just not very good branding.
Well, but just know, like, I just want to clarify, like, I'm not that guy who's going to be like, oh, I'll never do that.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I probably will do it at some point. I was just hanging out with the bass player in Trivium, and his whole band's on it. And he just said, huh?
Paolo, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, Meshuggah's been doing it. Like, they're all doing it.
Been doing it since day one, haven't they?
Right. And it's just easier. And it's easier on touring.
That's the only reason why. Like, I mean, in terms of, like, having, like, six dudes in a small van that we've bought with all the gear, you know, it's, I grab my Kemper and I don't even have to take a cabinet with me.
I totally,
you know?
Totally. And then, you know, like, what happened, that epiphany happened when you're on tour one day and it's like, I'm at Mars Volta, I go onto the stage and I go to my rig and it's like an arena or something and it's like the first show or something and I look and I go, there's no mic. And I'm like, oh, he forgot the mic. So I'm like, hey, go tell him to get a mic. And my tech looks nervous and then all of a sudden somebody else looks nervous. And not like I'm going to yell, because I didn't yell, but they were like, oh, how did we tell Juan that these things are changing? And so the sound man comes up and he goes, yeah, I'm not going to mic you. And I'm like, what? My sound is, you know, going through this head, coming through there. And he goes, I'll throw a mic up there. Doesn't guarantee I'm going to use it. He goes, you know, I'm going to reamp you in Pro Tools. And whoa. I just went, all right, I know you know best. And I just, at that point, I gave up. I was like, it doesn't fucking matter anymore. Then it's just literally, my rig was just for me monitoring and make me lose my hearing. So then, now, like, I'm just like, I don't even, you know, I mean, I bring my Ampex, but like, it's only for monitoring. Nobody is miking up amps except for old school, or, you know, somebody who's committed to that. But I mean, like, this new tour that I'm starting up next week, it's just DI. You know,
really?
I'll probably use the Ampeg DI because it's like the new one that they make.
The pedal.
Yeah. But that'll be my sound going into the PA because they want to keep it low volume and they don't want amp sound on stage. It's just going to be in ears. And a lot of people are doing that. It's like, man, I can't fight it anymore. You know what I mean? Oh, well. I mean, also, if I get a chance to do it myself the way I want to do it, yeah, I'm bringing fucking two pedal boards at least. I'm going to bring two SVTs.
There was a big downsizing on the Mars Volta across the board towards...
Money.
Towards the end.
Yeah, so check this out. I was saying this last night. So imagine do you guys imagine how much gear I have, right? So two SVTs alone is a lot, right? Yeah. Well, I'd have spare head. I had spare speakers. I had six basses out on tour with me with cases. I had spare pedals and a bunch of spare parts. I weighed more than anything else in the band. Then you have to add the drums. You have to add the other guitar players, the percussion stuff, the synthesizers, Omar's giant rig, the vocal monitor stuff, all the in-ear stuff, all that weight, right? You play Tokyo and you know your next show is in Australia, so you gotta fly that gear from Tokyo to Australia. You think you come home making money? You don't. It's all in freight.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but we did that for years. We wanted to play on our gear and have people feel what we were doing. And then we start losing money and then you're just like, I can't live on this anymore. So then guess what? The last tour, my pedal board fits in my luggage.
You were playing PF series heads, weren't you?
And that head, I think we rented the cabinet, but I might have flown with the head or something like that.
It was like a couple of 15s and a couple of the 410s or 210
PF caps,
which are lightweight anyway. I mean, they're designed to be lightweight. And those
heads, that's right. We loaded them in the bay of the bus. That's right. All
yeah,
right.
The heads, obviously, they flip round anyway, but the heads weigh nothing.
Joe's been like on your tour bus the whole time, just stashed away on the underneath going, oh, so that's what Juan's taking.
He's like this little flashlight. Like,
because
I don't even know. I guess we might have had a trailer. But we didn't want to have you're trying to cut costs, so you're not even having a gear van or anything like that, or, you know, whatever. I mean, it was all, you just got to make money. And bands make less and less every year. Mm. So, you know, yeah, when you meet these guys in Kemper world, you're like, oh, yeah, fuck it. I just did a demo with Dweezil Zappa for Earthquaker Devices, and I brought the pedal boards to him. He's a fractal.
Yeah.
And, you know, he told me when he plays live, there's no speaker cabinets. Yeah. It's all in-ears, and then they have, like, monitors in the front for the audience. But he's like, everything I do is from the ears.
Yeah.
You know? Amazing. Yeah. Cool. I also wanted to ask you a bit about your fretless bass, because you've spoken a lot about how you feel fretless bass works differently with all your pedals. And, I mean, certainly... the fretless bass, I guess, in general, is not something that has had an awful lot of success in heavy rock and roll. And it's certainly not the sort of instrument you see a lot of partnered with a big pedal board full of fuzz effects and octaves and stuff. What made you move to a flat wound fretless for?
Not flat wound.
It's not flat wound.
Never play flat wound on that bass.
Oh, really?
It's just because... because I wanted to do the Jaco thing, so I wanted to do harmonics and with flats. It's not, they don't pierce enough, they don't cut through enough. So no, it's always rounds, and it's just my best sounding bass. So it's just like just hitting a low E with fuzz, like my Sotek fuzz, and just going crashing. No bass sounds as good as that bass for that, you know. So I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna use this for. And then I made this Vato Negro record, and I was like, I mean, my intonation's good enough. Like, fuck it, it's the same. But I was getting all these overtones on the fretless you just don't get on a fretted instrument. The way you slide in, everything about it, it's just a more articulate, expressive instrument than a fretted is. And so, yeah, everything sounds bad. And it sounds more like a Moog synthesizer. When you're like, you know, with the Moog, you have the wheel, so you can go, like some Dr. Dre bass line or something. You can do that on fretless so easily because it's the same thing. It's like your wheel. It's like there's no frets holding you up. So that's why I did it. And I think I'm not really the first one. I remember when I met Greg from Autolux, and he's also in Failure. And I told him, yeah, I go, I only use fretless when I use heavy effects. And he goes, oh yeah, that's what I did in Failure. I don't know Failure's music. I wasn't a fan. Yeah, I just wasn't a fan. I didn't think they touch me the way they seem to have touched everybody else. But when he told me that, I was like, well, that's interesting. And I just did a new record, and it says fretless bass on there. So he's still doing fretless bass with effects. You know, I know they're a great band. It's just not music that resonates with me.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's, you know, so I'm sure there's a few other guys who've stumbled across the same thing. It's just you're throwing more really musical information into the effect, and that affects being able to articulate more things within it itself. So fretted bass, like, it's cool, but like throwing fretless, and it's just like, whoa, the way microsynth's envelope is way better than on fretted. The way vibrato sounds, it's way better. The pedal just getting more harmonic content, and it just flips out more.
I was going to say, do the pedals act differently with the fretless? Because obviously it's not, but in all sort of positions, it's a very fretted instruments are very linear instruments, aren't they? In terms of you put your finger there, it creates that note, right?
Right.
So on a fretless, you can obviously slide about all you want.
So the pedals,
the in between notes that you're not supposed to be playing.
Right. So fretted is like this. Fretted is chopping your notes. Yeah. So when you go from A to A, you know, it's like chop, chop, chop. Fretless is like a million more tones of information.
So the pedals must be sometimes going, oh shit, like, what are you doing, sort of thing, like, and it must act completely different sometimes, right?
You play guitar, so you know when you bend guitar, it's like, that's the same thing, but it's harder to bend bass strings, and you're going to wear your hand out if you're going for that all the time. But with fretless bass, your sliding's way easier than bending those big gauge strings.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. Like, yeah, when you play guitar leads or whatever, guys like Hendrix or something, you hear all those overtones that are changing when he's stretching that string, because the note's changing, so the pedal's reacting differently, the electricity's going different ways. It's like, it's kind of like the fundamental of it.
When did you make the changeover to fretless bass?
It was like somewhere in the early 90s. I borrowed my bass teacher's bass.
Because that's whose bass
It was. Yeah, it's my bass teacher's. And I knew he had had it, and he'd never really played it. And I said, hey, send it to me, because I was just way into Jaco. I was always into him, but then I had this like even more love for him, and I just go, hey, let me borrow it. So he sent me it, and then I just called him like, you're not getting it back. And he goes, all right, you need to send me $500, get me a Roscoe Beck 5-string, because at that time I was at Fender and Dorsey, so I just had, I got a Fender Roscoe and sent it to him, and that's been my bass. And you know, he always tells me, he goes, man, I can't believe I sold you that bass. He goes, you built your career off that bass. And I'm like, it isn't, but I know that, like, when I've played it around, like, any musician, whether it's a jazz musician, rock musician, fusion musician, they hear me on fretless and they always just go, that's your voice. And it is. It's just my voice. I'm way more musical on it than I am fretted. I'm a good fretted player, I believe, but I think I'm a really musical bassist when I play fretless.
Did you have the lines painted on it then?
Yes, because it's a stock fretless. So 1970 was the first year they ever made a fretless, and they made it with no lines. Well, I play rock, and I don't have all the elements and great monitoring that a jazz guy is going to have, or a fusion guy. So I made sure that, you know, it came that way. Steve, my bass teacher, did it, but I wore through it, so I had to have him repainted. But yeah, he was the first one, because he did it because he said, I just didn't have the ear for the intonation. So he had the lines painted.
Yeah.
So all my copies and everything that I built outside of that, their lines are painted. But now Eric at Eric's Guitar in Van Nuys, who does that, he won't do it anymore. Because he started getting all these bass players sending their necks in. And he's like,
oh, because you mentioned it on the Premier Guitar.
Yeah, and he just started getting so much work, and he just hates doing it. He goes, it's so time consuming. He goes, it's just not worth the money. So he doesn't do it anymore. So you got it. I mean, guys are just finding other luthiers who will do it.
You use that bass for all the Big Sur stuff.
Yes, for
as
sure.
Well.
For sure. Lisa, the singer in Big Sur, that's like her second voice. You know, she hears it and she just has an attachment to it as well.
The Big Sur stuff's probably the cleanest bass sound I think you've ever had. Do you use substantially less effects for that?
Mm-hmm. Not on the last record. The last two records, but the first record, yes, I was direct bass in my compressor and maybe the Boss OC2, and that was it. And then I think there was another record that had the same kind of a lineup. And then on Before Gardens, After Gardens, I was using the Boss Vibrato a lot, so it's on there. And then we did the Digital Gardens, and that's all distorted bass. And so, but yeah, but like on the first record and the second record, you're right. It's mostly, and just because it sounds great with Lisa's voice, and you know, it. If I play that bass and I just mess around, she'll go, "What is that? Play that." All right, I got something. And she'll write something right there on the spot. Almost always, we can just be sitting around like bored backstage, and I'll be playing something. She'll go, "What is that? Play that. Remember that. I got something for it." It's just, it's like, it's as if I sing. I mean, I do sing, but it's like as if I sang well. How about that? Yeah, because I don't sing. I'm not a great front person singer, but I can sing backups, you know?
Amazing. Well, thank you very much, Juan, for talking us through all your effects and gear that you have played throughout your time. We're going to have to bring things to a close now because we've got to go do this clinic and set things up. And unfortunately, because our guitar store is full of nooks and crannies, we're going to have to clear out half of the guitars and amplifiers in the store to try and fit the 80-odd people who are who are going to turn up this evening. So we better go do that. Yeah. But thanks very much, everyone, for tuning in to listen to this special edition of the GAK Guitar Shop podcast. We will be back to you with more special podcasts in the near future, so keep posting and I will let you know. As always, you can talk about this and ask us to do other sorts of podcasts on the podcast group, which is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. If you want to get in touch with me, you can get me on Twitter at Yosef_900. Jay Cross, how can people get in touch with you?
Shoot me an email at j.cross@gak.co.uk or on Twitter at jaybn1.
Joss Allen.
If you want to get in contact with me, just go on any GAK Vision YouTube video and then drop a comment below the video and I'll get back to you.
Cool. And Juan, I imagine they can get in touch with you on
pedalsandeffects.com. And I am Juan@pedalsandeffects.com. And people are always like, "What's your email?" I'm like, WannaPedalOnEffects.com.
Amazing. Wicked. Thanks very much, everyone.
Cheers.